My name is Terry Shellington. I'm the moderator this afternoon. And first we'll hear from our theme speaker, and then we'll have lunch around 12:30, and then we'll come back for a question period. And I'm sorry, but this is the only mic in the room, so when we get to that, I'll be inviting you to come to hear to ask your questions. We are really pleased to have one of the leadership candidates for the Progressive Conservative Party of Alberta in our midst, and our guest for this lunch hour, Lyle Oberg. And I'm not going to do a lot of introduction because we know a lot about him, and we're pleased to have this chance to be in conversation. So, Lyle, we welcome you to the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs.
Well, thank you very much, Terry. Can everyone hear me there? Is everyone fine? Well, good morning and good afternoon to everyone, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I believe this is about my third or fourth time at this particular council over the past 9 or 10 years. So it's always nice. It's always nice to come to Lethbridge. It's always nice to hear the questions from this group because they're always good questions, and I think that's fabulous. Terry stated that everyone knew who I was, and I think that's probably true to a certain degree. But I thought what I would do today is explain a little bit about how I arrived here in this particular position on day one of the leadership campaign. day one of the official leadership campaign. That's what it is. I went into politics in 1993, and in 1993, realistically, I had no business going into politics. I was a busy family doctor in Brooks, Alberta. I was doing about 100 deliveries a year, baby deliveries a year. I was seeing 50 to 60 patients a day. I was giving anesthetics. I was doing emergency call, and I was doing surgery. So I was really busy. I was one of the busiest 5% of physicians in the province at that particular point in time. And going into the 1993 election, I decided that I could do one of two things. I could either sit back and complain, which I had been doing a lot of. I do confess I had been doing a lot of that, or I could do something about it. And what I decided to do, I typically never really take the easy route on anything that I do, I decided to go against the incumbent. And the incumbent MLA was a gentleman who had won three elections. He had won them actually quite handily. And so with 12 days to go, I first of all bought a party membership, which was the first time I had ever bought a membership in a political party in my life. And secondly, I decided to run against the incumbent. My campaign manager was my office nurse, and we went and took him on. 12 days after I made that decision, we won the nomination meeting by a count of roughly 800 to 200. And for those of you who have been involved in nomination meetings, you know that that's actually quite a large amount of people to get out at one particular time. So that was great, and I then embarked into my career in politics, and I was Minister of Family and Social Services, where we did such things as the Fetal Alcohol Syndrome Initiative and so on. I was Minister of Learning, where we did things such as the mandatory second language, mandatory phys ed, and so on and so on. And I ended my career, hopefully not, but I ended in as Minister of Infrastructure and Transportation about 4 or 5 months ago. And at that time, I spoke up again. And I spoke up what you people in Alberta were saying. Quite simply, I was listening to what people were saying, and subsequently, I spoke up. And here I am today in the leadership race that is going to be very, very exciting. I feel that this race has to be about ideas. It has to be about who has the best ideas. It has to be about whose ideas resonate with you as a voter. And I want each and every one of you to think about that. Think about whose ideas you can follow, whose ideas you can decide to vote for. This campaign cannot be about who shakes the most hands and who smiles the nicest. It has to be about ideas. It has to be about policy. It has to be about moving this province ahead. And in saying that, I'm going to touch a couple of topics today, and there are a couple of topics that I feel are extremely, extremely important to Albertans, but I'd be more than happy to take questions afterwards on any topics. There's a lot of different issues in Alberta. There's a lot of very positive issues, but there's a lot of different issues in Alberta, so I'd be more than happy to take questions on anything. The first thing that I'm going to talk about is one that I feel is the most significant issue in Alberta today, and that's health care. And it's not just because I'm a medical doctor that I'm saying that. It's purely because of the economics. Today, we're spending 37% of our budget on health care. When I got elected in 1993, we were spending $3.5 billion on health care. That dropped down to $3.3 billion in 1994. Today, we're spending $10.5 billion. So it has tripled in the last 12 years. In April of this year, Bridget and I, who were in the legislature, passed a budget that put $1 billion into health care. In August of this year, we went back to the legislature and put another $330 million into health care. So that is the rate that it is increasing. I released the Conference Board of Canada report on Monday, and what it said is that at a rate of 7% increase, a 7% growth in healthcare per year, we would be running a structural deficit again by the year 2009-2010. By the year 2025, we would be spending 67% of our dollars, of our budgetary dollars, on healthcare, which is not sustainable. Therefore, the point that I'm making is no leadership candidate who is standing in front of you can talk about anything unless they first talk about healthcare. You can't talk about saving dollars unless you first talk about healthcare. Healthcare is the most important economic issue we have in Alberta today, because if we allow healthcare to continue on unchecked, we're going to see decreases in infrastructure, decreases in education, decreases in environment, or increases in taxes. And those are a reality that I don't think we want. So my plan for healthcare. First of all, I believe very much in access guarantees. And what they are simply is What they are quite simply is saying that there is a set amount of time that you must wait for your particular procedure. And I'll use hip operations as an example. 6 months is probably a reasonable time. There's a medical rationale for that. But what we're seeing right now in Alberta is people waiting 2.5 to 3 years to have their hip operated on. First of all, I think that's obscene from a patient point of view. But second of all, what happens is very interesting. And I don't know if any of you have ever had a hip operation or if you've ever known anyone who has had a hip operation. But what occurs is at about 6 months, you do pretty well. You do pretty well up until about 6 months. You continue on. And then you actually start to decompensate. You start going to the physician more. You start going on more medications. You start losing your productivity. Some people start going on a cane. Some people gain weight, which causes other health problems because they can't exercise, and so on. They have their operation 2.5 years after initially diagnosed, and it takes you that much longer to recover. So again, lost productivity in the system. So access guarantees, I think, are incredibly important. The second thing, and the thing that is going to be a little bit controversial, although I've been saying this right around the province and I've written articles about it in the National Post, is I believe people should have the right to pay. We need to repatriate the dollars that are going down to the United States. I would bet you again that everyone in this room knows someone who has gone down to the United States for treatment, who have taken their cash money and paid in the United States. Those dollars should be spent in Alberta. They should be spent in our healthcare system. They should be spent with our doctors. And I think it's incredibly important that we have the ability to do that. Second of all, if I want to pay to have my knee operated on Friday at 5 o'clock because I have a week off, A, I should have the ability to pay for it, and B, you as taxpayers should not. So that's number two. Number three is quite simply that physicians must work in and out of the system as opposed to in or out. What happens in or out is the popular physicians gravitate towards the pay system. They gravitate over here, leaving the not-so-popular physicians over here. The issue, quite simply, is every Albertan should have access to every physician. So what I'm advocating is that 75% of their time must be spent in the public system and 25% of their time in the pay system. One of the big issues that I hear when I say that is, well, we don't have enough physicians. That isn't entirely true. because one of the areas that is of great concern to many physicians, I have a friend, for example, who's an orthopedic surgeon in Edmonton. He receives 6 hours of operating time a week. He would love to operate 20 to 24 hours, but he only receives 6. So we're wasting that time, wasting that person's abilities for the other 18 hours. That's one thing. The other thing I hear is, well, there's not enough operating rooms. Well, again, my wife had her cataract operated on about a month ago, actually. And she was number 18 of the day, the 18th cataract of the day. They now take about 10 minutes to do. She finished at 1:30 in the afternoon, which was the last surgical case of the day. What do you think happened to the operating room? It closed. Those are the types of things that we can continue to utilize. If I'm having my knee operated on, I don't care if it's done at 10 o'clock at night, quite simply. I don't care. I have no problems with that. That's three. Number four is a thing where you really save money and really increase health, and it's a thing called proactive disease management. And what it is, quite simply, is we have the ability to test you, for example, and determine if you're going to be a diabetic. And we can say, if you do this, this, and that, you will be a diabetic in 20 years. But if you do this, this, and this, you'll be a diabetic in 40 years. And we can tell you what that is. We can pass that information on to you. And if we can save that 20 years of your being a diabetic, then we'll all live to be 94 or 96. So we have that ability to do. As we get more into the human genome, a lot of diseases, it's been shown, have triggers that turn the disease on and off. And we can identify these now. So what I'm talking about, quite simply, is having a personal health report card for you that tells you how you can improve what you do, how you can improve your health. And coincidentally, improved health also leads to decreased cost. I think that's what we all want. We don't want to decrease cost at the effects of decreased health. So that's number four. Number five is to eliminate healthcare premiums. And this is not simply a political ploy or tactic. And it's not simply Bridget because I copied it from the Liberals or anything like that.
Of course you did.
There actually is a rationale for it. And what the rationale is those people that are in the lower income have their premiums subsidized. The people that are in the higher income have their premiums paid for by their company, by their employment. It's actually a very small line in the middle income people that actually pay the healthcare premiums, and I don't think that's fair. Quite simply, I think we should get rid of the healthcare premiums. I think we can get savings doing it the other way as well. And number six, and this is my favorite, and there's lots of people from school boards here today, and if this rings a bell, I think you know why. I believe, and everyone here has talked to doctors and nurses who simply say, well, if the system only did this, the system only did that, we would save money and get better patient care. Well, I think it's time that we put our money where our mouth is. And what I would say is that we would put together a pot of $50 million that would go to frontline healthcare workers to help them find out if their ideas really work. Unless you think I'm just making this up, and I'll tell you the name. It'll be called the Alberta Initiative for Healthcare Improvement. Does that ring any bells? I did the same thing, the Alberta Initiative for School Improvement, when I was learning minister, and that was probably one of the most successful programs that has been in education in a long, long time. And it is exactly that, allowing frontline workers to experiment to find out better ways of doing things. So that's healthcare. The second thing that I thought I would just simply touch on today, and there's a lot of farmers in the room, there's a lot of agriculture people in the room, is agriculture. I think that that's obviously incredibly important in southern Alberta. It tends to be the basis of our livelihood in southern Alberta, and it's something that has gone through a lot of changes, and not necessarily positive changes in the last while. We saw BSE, and just on that, I just want to say something that really hurts today. And that is that the vet school in Calgary was just announced that it's not going to be open for another year, that it's going to be 2008. And that is simply because we didn't give them money to build their buildings. And for those of us who are in rural Alberta, we have to get that vet school going. We have to ensure that there are vets out there. So delaying it a year, albeit not catastrophic, it certainly does set us behind in southern Alberta. And I think that that's quite literally unforgivable. But it's happening and we'll live with it. So that's an aside. But in agriculture, what we need to do, when you take a look at the issues behind agriculture, what you see is a worldwide commodity price. And that worldwide commodity price, in many ways, is controlled by the U.S. and the European Union. It's controlled by the American subsidies and the European Union subsidies. Us, as a little player of 3.3 million people, do not have much of a chance in going against the U.S. So what we need to do is create an internal market. We need to create an internal market for us. And to that end, I'm a huge fan of biodiesel and biofuels. When we see what's happening in Brazil, when we see what's happening in the U.S., when we see the technology that is coming forward on biofuels, I think not the savior of agriculture, but it certainly is going to help dramatically to have that internal market for agriculture, to have the biofuel market available. So what I would be prepared to do is mandate that 5% of diesel fuel and subsequently gasoline, when ethanol becomes a little bit more technologically advanced, but 5% of diesel fuel must be biofuels. So what we will have done is created an internal market for our grains and oil seeds with regards to that, and I think that's a big step forward. We also need to give some incentives to get the infrastructure in place, to get the crushers in place, to get the infrastructure in place so we can do this as quickly as possible. For those of you who follow this particular technology in the U.S., you're seeing a dramatic increase in the number of refining capabilities and refining areas in the U.S., and we need to keep up. Unfortunately, we haven't. We have the ability to be on the cutting edge of biofuels, and I think that we have to absolutely take that. So that's one area. The other area, and realistically, that's a medium distance approach. The other issue is in the short term. And I have talked to farmers right around the province. My father is a farmer, my brother is a farmer, and trust me, they let me know what they think. And one of the things that I hear consistently is about the CASE program. And I have heard people call it, which I loved, is the acronym for CASE, Chartered Accountant Income Subsidy. I love that. And but the bottom line is, CASE is cumbersome, CASE is expensive, CASE is very difficult to do, and isn't always the right thing to do, is not always getting the results that we want. What we want is we want short-term relief to farmers until we can get the internal market established. So I believe, and no one has really challenged me on this, but I believe one of the simplest ways to do it, simple and fast, is an acreage payment. Let's do it in an acreage payment so we can get the dollars out into the agricultural community immediately. Is it going to be absolutely fair to everyone? No, it isn't. And I hear farmers all over saying, well, but this guy's going to get more than me, and this guy's going to get that. We've got to get over that, guys. We need money into the agricultural community. We just put $261 million into the CASE program, and I would question whether or not anyone has seen the benefit of that yet. Point is, it's an immediacy. It's an immediate issue, and we do have to find solutions to this. Medium to long term, biofuels. I think it's going to be a very good way in the grains and oilseed. Short term, though, I think we do need to look at an acreage payment. So, ladies and gentlemen, I've talked my 20 minutes here. I'd be more than happy to take questions on absolutely anything. I've touched agriculture, I've touched healthcare. There's a lot of other things that are in Alberta. Before I quit, though, I just want to introduce some people. Bridget Pasteur, the MLA in Lethbridge. Stand up, Bridget. Joyce Jacobs, the former MLA for Cards and Table Warner. And a candidate for the nomination in the upcoming election. And Ron Hyrath, former MLA for Cards and Table Warner. Stand up. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I truly look forward to your questions coming up, and hopefully we can get into a wonderful dialogue and a wonderful conversation about Alberta. Thank you very much.